Chapter 2. Exploring the Nature of Plasma Clouds and Their Energy. I first got to know Professor Chandra Vikramasinghe in the 1970s, along with his colleague, mentor, and former teacher, Sir Fred Hoyle. It is appropriate that this should be the case, because Fred Hoyle was famous not only for being one of the world's leading astrophysicists and theoretical astronomers, but for writing the science fiction classic The Black Cloud, which is about an intelligent cloud in space. I will refer to that book again later. The Kordalevsky clouds are not clouds in the usual sense of being made of water vapor and being within our atmosphere. There are two of them, as we have seen, roughly centered round two precise points in space between the Earth and the Moon. What kind of clouds could possibly exist at these points? After all, they are in what we used to call outer space. So what could be there to make a cloud? The clouds are composed not only of the subatomic particles already mentioned, but also of dust particles. That may not sound very exciting, but that is because you may well not yet know how important, complex, and incredible a dust cloud in space is. Space dust is described like this in a 2008 technical paper. Dust is a generic name for minute solid particles with diameters of less than 0.1 to 0.5 millimeters. The use of a range of size, rather than a specific number for the cutoff, indicates that this upper limit for dust size is somewhat arbitrary and scientifically insignificant. A plausible argument for the range is that particles greater than these sizes are unlikely to float in the air by themselves. There is also a somewhat arbitrary lower limit of a few nanometers to distinguish dust grains from more fundamental particles, such as electrons, protons. Therefore, this choice of the lower limit includes small clusters as dust. It is useful to have read this, but it is not entirely satisfactory for us, because it speaks of dust floating in air, and there is no air in space. However, it can act as a kind of approximate guideline for us about sizes of dust particles, whether single or clustered. Astrophysicists also sometimes like to speak of dust in space as grains. And although much dust is spherical, in space much of it is elongated, and hence grain-shaped. Also, there is a lot of lumpy, clumpy, and irregular dust in space. Not all dust contains atoms, but that will have to be explained later when I tell how plasma makes its own dust of itself. Plasma is essentially made up of two subatomic particles, electrons that have a negative charge, and protons that have a positive charge, and ions, sometimes known as incomplete atoms, which also have a positive charge. In whole atoms, there is a balance between the negative and positive charges. Physical matter is really atomic matter, because in order to be physical, it has to be made of whole atoms. However, an atom can be turned into an ion by the simple means of stripping it of one of its electrons. It is important to realize that ions are not considered to be physical matter, and that they are charged. And to give some idea of the relative sizes, it is usual for a charged dust particle to have 10,000 electrons sticking to its surface. Because protons are larger than electrons, they do not stick to dust particles in quite so high numbers. Contrary to what we might assume, living as we do in a material world, particles only very rarely come together to form whole atoms, and non-atomic plasma is the main constituent of the universe, more than 99% of it. As I say, we will see shortly why scientists think this. But the important point here is that from this perspective, atomic matter is exceptional, and hard, rocky planets are very rare indeed. It is because there is more plasma than there is atomic matter that I view ions protons and electrons as primary, and whole atoms as secondary. This way of looking at things will, I hope, become clearer as we go along. We will see later that our sun spews out huge quantities of positively charged protons and ions and fills the whole solar system with them. So our entire solar system, including the Kordalevsky clouds, is constantly being inundated with a never-ending flood of ions and protons. Since space is full of furiously racing and whizzing particles of both negative and positive charge, it is not possible for a dust cloud to exist without each single dust particle within it being massively bombarded with thousands of subatomic particles, which we have seen are much, much smaller than the dust particles, and thus becoming charged itself. It is well known by all scientists working in this field that the surfaces of dust particles, or grains, are continuously being charged by a relentless rain of thousands of electrons and positive ions striking them. When those are equal in number, and the positive and negative charges balance out, the dust particle is said to have a net zero charge. However, this is a rare event, and even when it occurs, it is likely to be transient and exist for only a few instants. In our own solar system, the Kordalevsky clouds are exposed to this relentless and never-ending hurricane of positive charge coming from the sun in the form of the solar wind. The sun also emits some filaments or streams of negatively charged electrons as well, but they are far less important components of the solar wind than the positively charged ions and protons. There are such things as negatively charged ions, and they can exist within a plasma, but they are not important for our discussions in this book, and we will not refer to them again. One might well ask, if there are sustained streams of positively charged particles being emitted by the sun, why does the phenomenon not have a name in the way that streams of negatively charged particles, known as electrons, are called electricity? It was Peter Mitchell, who died in 1992, a very dear friend of mine, who took steps to fill this gap in our language, naming such flows of positive currents protosity. Peter won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1978. He even built a mechanical motor that operated on protosity. He called it a protic motor, and he built it to show that protosity could be a source of energy to drive a motor sitting in front of you in the same way as electricity can do. So I shall use the word protosity from time to time to describe the flows of positively charged currents, even though the word is still used only rarely by others. Because Peter worked in a highly specialized and closed branch of bioenergetics, not enough people ever knew of his terminological innovation for it to spread to the wider public. Peter is so little known to the general public that his obituary, which I wrote, is included on the book's website. My efforts to locate Peter's protic motor in recent years have drawn a blank, alas. I just hope it is still preserved somewhere, though if so, it is possible that no one knows what it is. Because the Kordalevsky clouds, and others like them, are bombarded from without by charged particles, the particles inside them and the dust interact with great intensity and complexity, evolving, as we shall see later, highly complex patterns. Such a large charged dust cloud in space is known as a, quote, dusty complex plasma, unquote. One of the things which distinguishes such an entity is that all the processes inside it cannot be described by physicists using simple linear equations. Everything taking place inside this kind of plasma operates in a manner described by non-linear equations. When something is linear, it means there is a direct and identifiable connection between cause and effect, so that one can predict behavior. But when linearity breaks down, everything becomes unpredictable and immensely complex. It is important to bear nonlinearity in mind, because it is a feature of quantum mechanical supercomputers now in development. An analogy with these will play a part in arguments later in the book to show that these clouds may be highly intelligent. Quantum computers break their information down into a different kind of bit, what is now called qubits, that's QU. The QU stands for quantum. Because quantum theory is a bit weird, a qubit can have the values of 0 and 1 at the same time, very much like having our cake and eating it. Some say that qubits can even have any value between 0 and 1. Meanwhile, the more restless and thrusting of the computer developers look upon qubits as being so yesterday. They now say the future lies not with qubits, but with qdits. A qdit can have 10 or more values at once. This is like having 10 cakes and eating them. One might say that the work being done today on quantum computers is an attempt to construct computing devices that can do nonlinear reasoning. Direct causation is linear, but some circumstances allow all sorts of unpredictable outcomes and unexpected influences. Direct causes that might take place in an ideal world get interrupted and blocked, and things come at you from the left and the right, and they change things. This, as we will see later, is the inescapable and fundamental nonlinearity of dusty complex plasmas. One useful definition of dusty complex plasma, in a single sentence, is by physicist Osamu Ishihara. Complex plasma, also known as a dusty plasma, is a plasma with micron-sized, a micron is a millionth of a meter, dust particles, in which charged dust particles interact with a background plasma. This definition dates from 2008, and things have moved on since then, and the people working in the field now just say dusty complex plasma. Also, it is no longer necessarily seen to be the case that the charged dust particles and the background plasma, in quotes, should be viewed as separate things that, quote, interact. It is probably more accurate to view the dusty complex plasma as a unified entity, which happens to contain not only those two components or states, but many more besides. I will be elaborating on this last point as we move along in the discussion, and it is also not the case that the dust particles must be micron-sized. They can be much smaller than that, namely nano-sized, which is 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter. It is surprising how many scientists, including distinguished professors and experts, still do not understand what is a dusty complex plasma. Science has fragmented so much that they do not even know what the people down the hall in the next lab are doing. There are some developments that tend to make research into plasma better known. Very fine plasmas are used to deposit circuits onto microchips. So there are large numbers of people working for the huge corporations making these semiconductor chips. And one of their greatest concerns is the various types of plasma. Indeed, there are huge profits to be made by getting a new and useful angle on this subject. Many new developments are therefore understandably subject to close corporate secrecy. In addition to these corporate considerations, the military and security people are hard at work on plasma, and they do not shout from the rooftops either. The number of advanced plasma scientists who do openly publish new findings and are free to do so is very small. When one of them dies, such as Padmakant Shukla, he was Indian, in 2013, all of his colleagues in the field feel as if a whole wing of a mansion has been closed down. Such was the vastness of his knowledge, and such is the sense of loss of both himself and of his wisdom and experience. We will see later that heroic free thinkers and researchers have suffered from the attempts of the Nazis, the Soviet military and security complex, the CIA, and others to control their work.